pressed so firmly against them, it seems impossible. "Dear Aurora," the king says, though there's nothing loving in his gaze, "now that you know our plan, would you like to join us on our side? We can give you anything you want, you know." I shake my head furiously at her while trying uselessly to shout no. She doesn't think he would actually share anything with her, does she? He'll probably kill her as soon as she gets anywhere near him, and then they'll tie me up until they figure out how to use me. I want to hurl my magic at him. I want to take every knife from inside my jacket and throw them at him. But I know he'll attack right back, with far more strength and skill, and I need to get this damn gag off before that happens. "No," Aurora says, to my relief. "I don't want any part of your plans. I don't want a ruined world. The only thing I want is this." She tilts her chin up a little before continuing. "I want to know who I really am. I want to know who that witch was, the one who stole me, started raising me, and then left me at the Unseelie Palace. I want to ask her about my real family." "The witch," the king chuckles. "You can't ask her anything. She's dead." Silence follows before Aurora manages to say, "What? How?" "I killed her myself when her job was done."
"You... so,
she never actually abandoned me there?"
"No. We bought you from her. You were a vessel. You carried an immense amount of power that your mother and I paid her to gather for us. She dropped you off, we handed over her payment, and then we killed her. Discreetly, of course. We removed all the power we needed from you, slowly, over the course of several weeks, as the witch had advised. Someone was supposed to kill you once your purpose was fulfilled, but your mother intervened. She felt sorry for you. She'd come to love you, in fact. I thought it was absolutely preposterous to adopt you as our own. Who knew what kind of lineage you might have come from? But Amrath was quite insistent." He sighs. "One has to choose one's battles, and I decided this one wasn't worth it. Amrath wanted you. So I let her have you."
Aurora looks stunned, and even I've stopped struggling so intently as I listen with half my attention to this awful story. "So, everything you've always told me," Aurora says, "about a witch coming to work with Yokshin for a while, and then abandoning me there. That was all a complete lie. You never actually wanted me?"
"Me?" The king seems surprised. "No, I didn't want to muddy our royal lineage. If we didn't already have Rourke, I most certainly would have said no. But," he shrugs, "you were a sweet child, amusing. As long as you played by our rules and kept your mother happy, I didn't particularly mind having you around. You were like a pet who just happened to have the label of daughter."
I look at Aurora and see tears welling in her eyes. "If you've kept this from me my whole life, then why bother telling me now?"
"Because, my dear, you stopped playing by the rules. You leaked your brother's plans, stole one of my dragons, and joined my enemies. And do you know what happens to those who stop playing by my rules?"
A tear rolls down her cheek. Her lips shudder as she answers, "You kill them."
"I'm glad to see you've learned something in your time with us."
I hear the word kill, and I decide I'm done with trying to get this gag off. I know my skills are seriously lacking when it comes to combat magic, but if there's no other way out of this, then I may as well try. I pull magic from inside of me as quickly as I can. It coalesces above my hand, and I hurl it at the king. Clearly, he wasn't expecting that, because he doesn't get out of the way in time. My sparks singe through the top half of his left arm, causing him to cry out. Bolstered by the fact that I've actually managed to achieve something with my magic, I reach into my jacket for a knife. But Rourke is way ahead of me. Not bothering with magic, he races across the roof and slams into both of us. Aurora screams as we go down, and Imperia, who I'd somehow forgotten about, roars behind us. I barely have time to wonder why she hasn't done anything until now. Perhaps because she didn't see Rourke and the king as threats? Before Rourke slams his fist down on my arm, knocking the knife from my grip. The rooftop shudders from Imperia's movement. Scorching heat rips through the air as her flames head for Rourke. He pulls away from me and hastily raises a shield of magic above us. Somewhere behind him, the king yells out an angry command in a foreign tongue. The top of the roof shudders again, and Imperia lets loose a grating, wailing sound. The flames stop. Rourke knocks Aurora down again with his fist, and I fumble for another knife. Seeing my hand in my jacket, Rourke lunges for me again, but something cat-like pounces from the edge of my vision and lands on him. A small tiger, then a panther, then a blue cat with orange spots. It yowls and screeches and tears at Rourke's chest. He strikes out with a bolt of bright red magic, throwing the cat through the air above me. Bandit! I shriek inside my head. I twist around to see where he landed and try to scramble toward him. He begins growing, changing, shifting into my favorite form. Seconds later, a dragon with sleek black scales and burning red eyes stands beside Imperia. And unlike her, Bandit is free to attack anyone he wants on this rooftop. An ear-splitting roar issues from his mouth, followed by a stream of flames. The king darts forward, diverts the flames with a shield, then flings magic right back at Bandit. The magic transforms into glowing arrowheads, and every single one of them pierces through Bandit's scales. "Mm-hmm," I shriek from behind the gag. Then something wraps around my ankle and drags me backward. I grab onto vines and roots, but Rourke is stronger, and the plants tear through my fingers. I see the knife twisted from my hand. I grab hold of it. As he flips me over, I drive the knife toward him, but he catches my wrist, squeezes impossibly hard, then tugs the knife from my grasp. Aurora, who must have got to her feet while I was scrambling after Bandit, flings herself at Rourke with a wild scream. He shoves her back onto the ground, raises my knife, and brings it swiftly down, straight into his sister's abdomen. Aurora gasps. I scream behind my gag. Imperia releases a wailing cry. And then Rourke is tugged roughly away from us. Black and purple hair whips past. A gold arrow zings through the air. I lift myself up in time to see Violet spin and kick, swing a punch, then drive an arrow directly into Rourke's chest, the words, "Not my daughter," punctuating each move. Across the roof, Rin is fighting the king. They're circling each other amid a swirling blaze of magic. Beside me, Aurora's trying to drag herself away from the fight and closer to Imperia. I move toward her, and suddenly Violet is crouching in front of me, her wild purple eyes dancing across my face. A glittering blade appears in one hand. She raises it to the sticky substance covering my mouth. "I found you. I found you," she gasps. "Finally, I found you." Her guardian blade slices through the gag. I suck in air, and Rourke looms behind Violet, an arrow still protruding from his chest and his own sword gripped in his hand. He strikes downward. "Freeze!" I yell at him, my magically enhanced voice echoing inside my head. And then every Unseelie fairy in and around the Haverton Tower, stop fighting, stop using magic, drop to the ground and stay there. Power races to escape my body. The force of it knocks me forward onto my hands. Then everything becomes still. I raise my head in time to see Rourke's sword slip from his hands and clatter to the rooftop as he topples down among the plants. Across the roof, the Unseelie King goes the same way. A beat of silence follows. Then Vi is pulling me toward her, and Rin is racing across the rooftop, and soon the three of us are kneeling, crying in each other's arms, while Vi repeats, "I can't believe we found you," over and over again. Then another pair of arms squeezes around us, and I catch a glimpse of golden hair. I pull my head back enough to see Calla, and then Chase, standing behind her, his hand on her shoulder. And then into the picture crashes Dash, almost knocking Chase over, as he swings his arm around him. Then the two of them are laughing, and I'm crying, and tears blur my vision as my family wraps itself around me. Eventually, I pull away enough to sniff and ask, "Aurora and Bandit, Are they okay? That's Bandit? Kala asks.
Ah, I see. The arrowhead's in his chest. Chase says. He'll be okay as long as he doesn't shrink yet. I'll remove them quickly.
He hurries toward Bandit as Kala asks, Did you say Aurora was here too?
Yes. Rourke stabbed her in the stomach. And Imperio was here, but...
As I lean to the side to see past Bandit, I realize there's definitely no other dragon on this rooftop. And if Imperia's gone, then Aurora must have left.
I'm sure she'll be fine, Kala says. Fairies can survive stab wounds, remember?
I turn back to face her. I look at Violet, then at Rin, truly examining their faces for the first time. Their red-rimmed eyes and tear-stained cheeks, their beaming smiles. These are the faces of my parents.
Everybody freeze!
Ice forces its way into the warmth, saturating my heart. Despite being told to freeze, we climb slowly to our feet to face the owner of the voice, Head Counselor Ashlau. With her bow raised, takes slow steps out of the glass room, housing the swimming pool. Guardians spill out behind her, two of them raising bows and pointing arrows at us. Isn't it nice that we can bag up all the Unseelies and a bunch of Griffin Rebels in one afternoon? Counselor Ashlau says.
No,
someone answers loudly. From the crowd of Guardians behind her, a man steps forward. Perry. And then another. Harried. The man who rescued us from Noxum. They walk forward before turning to face their fellow Guardians.
This won't be happening anymore, Perry says in a loud voice. It's time the persecution of Griffin-gifted Fae came to an end.
Get out of the way, Perry, before we take you down, too,
Counselor Ashlau snaps.
Then you'll have to take me down.
And me,
Harried says.
And me,
someone else adds. Other Guardians walk forward, and soon there's a large enough group of them facing Counselor Ashlau that she appears to reconsider. She lowers her weapon slightly, then says,
Obviously, none of you were at the Creepy Hollow Guild when that one walked in.
She points at me.
She is beyond dangerous and should not be allowed to go free.
Oh, for goodness sake,
Perry says.
She only did that because of the way you've treated her and her family, and the way you've treated others like her for years. You can hardly blame her or any of the others for wanting to protect themselves. And she just saved us, I might add. Or did you think all these Unseelies suddenly decided to stop fighting and lie down because it's nap time? No. So you damn well better let that girl and her family go.
Counselor Ashlau lowers her weapon. It disappears as she lets go of it. The Guardians behind her, who have arrows trained on us, do the same.
Fine, Counselor Ashlau says, her jaw jutting forward slightly. They're free to go. For now. But this isn't over yet.
No, Perry says. It certainly isn't.
He starts to walk away, but then he backtracks.
One other thing. That tracking enchantment they breathed in? The one that's forcing some of them to keep moving every few hours so you don't find them? It needs to go.
Counselor Ashlow's mouth presses into a thin line.
You do not get to issue commands to the head of the...
He's right,
one of her henchmen guardians says. Moments ago, he had an arrow pointed at us. But now, I watch as he breathes out a long sigh and walks past Counselor Ashlau. He stops just in front of her.
I know how to remove the tracking enchantment.
He looks past Perry and focuses on us.
I can give one of you the removal spell before you leave.
Cool, Perry says.
All sorted.
He strides back into the crowd of guardians, and with that, they all begin to disperse. With half-smiles and stunned expressions, my family groups together again. Rin pulls me against his side for another hug. Violet takes my face between her hands and kisses my forehead.
Come on, she says, reaching for my hand.
Let's go home. Epilogue.
Wind streams through my hair, and blood races in my veins as Bandit soars through the air above the oasis. From way up here, I've got a great view of every part of the Griffin Rebels' home. The giant trees with houses cradled in their branches, the pavilion and hammocks and the various buildings on the ground, the orchard and the playground, the river and the enchanted beach. A tiny part of me is still waiting for someone to tell me there's been a terrible mistake, that these people aren't my family, and that I should be tossed out into the Fey world to fend for myself. But the rest of me is daring to accept that I finally found the place where I belong. The rest of me is daring to be happy. We near the edge of the dome lair and Bandit banks, then takes a nosedive toward the ground. My heart pounds, and my shriek is lost in the wind. At the last moment, when it seems as though he may crash into the three people waiting for us below, he slows, pulls up, and does another small circle, narrowly avoiding knocking out the pavilion with one wing, before coming around to land. "That was amazing!" Jack exclaims, clapping his hands as Bandit comes to a stop, and I undo the straps of the saddle Chase found for me. "Can I have a turn now?" He looks up at Rin. "Please, please, 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 please!" "Nope, sorry," Rin says. "When you're a little older." "But my sister can take me. She'd never let me fall." He beams at me as I slide down Bandit's side. I try not to laugh at the way he keeps saying that. My sister. If I were younger, I'd probably keep saying my brother. As it is, I keep looking at him, searching for any similarities in the way we look. His hair is different. Dark brown streaked with an orange yellow that he apparently gets from one of our grandfathers. But I wonder if perhaps our noses are the same shape? Chase walks to Bandit's side and runs his hand along his smooth black scales as Rin says, "Okay, I'll think about the possibility of you riding with someone, but you're definitely not riding alone until you're older. And we'll need to find a saddle that can take two people. Uncle Chase said he has one of those." Chase looks around, a guilty expression on his face. I suppress a laugh as Rin narrows his eyes and says, "Did he now?" "I don't know," Chase answers in an innocent tone. "Did I really say that, Jack?"
"Yes, you did."
"How about you climb onto Bandit's back and sit in the saddle?" Rin suggests. "That's all I'm allowing at this point." As Bandit bends a little lower and Rin helps Jack get up into the saddle, Chase asks me, "Are you finding the dome high enough? If not, we could take Bandit somewhere else to really spread his dragon wings." "Yeah, we didn't seem to have a problem, so I think there's enough space here. Well, for now, anyway. When Bandit gets more adventurous, we can try somewhere new.
Perhaps he'd like to meet some of our dragons sometime."
I hesitate for a moment, wondering if I've heard correctly. "Wait, you guys have dragons?"
"Not here," he adds with a laugh. "Back at the mountain. The real mountain, not our little operation center here inside the oasis. There's a huge cavern inside the mountain, and that's where our dragons, Nazgrels, and gargoyles live. Other than the gargoyles that now live here. They fend for themselves, and they're wilder now than they used to be, but most of the dragons and gargoyles still answer to me."
"Why didn't you tell me about these dragons when I first came here?"
Chase shrugs. "I guess you didn't tell us you liked dragon riding. In fact," he adds, "I'm not even sure you knew you liked dragon riding back then. You first rode dragons when you were with the Unseelies, didn't you?"
"Yeah, that's true." I watch Jack patting Bandit's back as my thoughts turn for a moment to Aurora and Imperia. I haven't heard anything from Aurora since she vanished from the top of Haverton Tower Hotel 2 days ago, and Perry says the Guild knows nothing about her either. But I'm convinced she's alive and well. I think she enjoyed her freedom more than she expected, and she decided to disappear before anyone could take it away from her.
"Hey, Em."
I look to the side as Violet comes toward us.
"I saw you up in the sky a few minutes ago," she says as she puts an arm around my shoulders.
"So the dizziness has definitely passed now?"
"Yes, thank goodness." I loop my arm around Vi's back and give her a sideways hug, resting my head on her shoulder.
When we returned to the oasis after leaving Haverton Tower, dizziness hit me. According to Anna, it was due to overuse of the elixir that stimulated my griffin ability. It came in waves, each one not quite as bad as the one before it, and by this morning it felt like it might finally be gone for good.
"If I can sweep through the air and plummet toward the ground and still feel great by the end of it," I say, "then I think the dizziness is definitely gone."
Fantastic. Flying on Bandit looked like amazing fun. Do you think he'd mind if I took him for a ride sometime?
No, I'm sure he'd love it.
I lift my head from her shoulder.
So you like dragon riding too?
In the same way that I keep examining Jack and the rest of my family members for any physical resemblance between us, I keep looking for other things we might have in common. Similar likes or dislikes or skills.
"Yes, I'm definitely a fan of soaring the skies on the back of a dragon," Violet says. "Remind me to tell you about Arthur at some point. He was seriously cool."
The list of stories I'm supposed to remind you about is getting longer and longer. Her beautiful purple eyes sparkle as she laughs.
"Just wait until we get to our other celebrations outside the oasis when you meet your grandparents. Loads more stories are going to come up."
My smile feels impossibly wide as I say, "I can't wait. Oh, and speaking of celebrations, do you need help with any picnic stuff?"
"Thanks, that would be great. We just need to get all the food down to the beach."
She leaves her arm around my shoulders as we head for the tree houses. "Rin said he and Chase will move the chairs, blankets, games, and all that. Calla was going to help me with the food, but she's gone to fetch Perry."
"Fetch him? Has he never been here before?"
"No, he actually hasn't. It's never been necessary for him to come here, so we decided it was safer if he didn't know anything about our haven."
"But now?" I ask. "Do you really think things are safer now?"
"Honestly, I think it would always have been safe for him to know the location of this place. The protection we have on the oasis is pretty much unbreakable. But I guess things do feel a little safer now. The real reason he's finally coming here, though, is because we really wanted him to join our celebration. He knew about you back when we all thought you died, so he's obviously excited about that. And he's busy doing so much to help make this world safer for Griffin-gifted Fae. Not to mention all the risks he's taken for us over the years. I feel like we have a lot to celebrate with him." I nod as we reach the spiral staircase leading up and around the tree. And then, since Rin taught me yesterday how to launch myself up these stairs with magical super speed, Vi and I decide to race each other all the way up to her house. We're neck and neck the whole way, until I smack my hand against her front door split seconds before she does. Then I turn, gasping for breath, and ask, "You didn't let me win, did you?"
"Let you win, Emerson."
Vi places her hands on her hips as she catches her breath. "Clearly.
You have no idea yet how competitive I am."
I grin. "Awesome. You know what? We should go into a city sometime and race each other parkour style, like Val and I used to do." At the thought of Val, though, my smile slips. I turn away and push the door open into Vi and Rin's kitchen, wondering when I should go and visit her. I haven't seen her since the night I discovered her connection to Ada, but I meant it when I told her I understand why she did it. And she's the closest friend I've ever had, so we should probably try to make amends. I have no idea how much she'll remember about magic and the world I now live in, given that the guild's memory-altering enchantment has finished spreading. Everything that came before the tear in the veil, I hope.
"Oh, hey, here's your chocolate unicorn," Vi says as she reaches the kitchen counter.
"You left it here after lunch."
"Ah, yes."
I catch the small unicorn-shaped chocolate in one hand. "My reward for enduring a counseling session this morning." She chuckles as her magic begins sending all the food that's lined up on the table into three large picnic baskets on the floor.
"It wasn't that bad, was it?"
"It wasn't bad. It was just..." When I can't seem to come up with a word, Vi says, "I know what you mean. At the guild, whenever a trainee ends up killing someone during an assignment, that trainee has to go for counseling afterward. I always hated it.
I never wanted to rehash what happened and how it affected me, but looking back, I know it was a good thing.
Yeah, I know, I say with a sigh. And Mira's nice. I like her. Turns out we have quite a few things to talk about. It's just not easy.
The ache that surfaces whenever Danny comes to mind tightens now around my chest. The thought of her induces so many conflicting emotions inside me. Disgust, because she stole someone else's life and didn't care that that someone would die because of her. Anger, because she never told me the truth about her background or mine. Regret, because I never got the chance to ask her about any of this. Sadness, because I also kind of miss the mother she was to me when I was little.
Hey, Rin says, interrupting my thoughts as he walks into the house. Are those picnic blankets still in the top of Jack's closet?
Oh, Em, are you... He cuts himself off before he can finish. Sorry, doing it again.
It's okay, I say to him. Don't worry about it.
This has happened several times in the past 2 days. Rin senses the intense emotions flooding through me, asks me if I'm okay, and then apologizes for invading my privacy by unintentionally feeling my feelings. I felt a bit weird about it the first time, but I'm getting used to it already.
The blankets, Vi says.
Yes, they should be in Jack's closet above his clothes. Great. And the exploding frisbee?
That sounds dangerous, I comment.
It's actually lots of fun, Vi says, then adds,
I don't know where it is. I'm going to have to look.
As Rin leaves to get the blankets, Vi walks around the table and says, Em, can you continue putting all the food in the baskets? You don't have to use magic if you don't feel comfortable doing that. She goes off to search for the exploding frisbee, and I consider whether I should risk trying to move food with magic. But at the sound of footsteps coming toward the front door, I turn around.
Hey,
Dash says, leaning against the doorframe while holding something behind his back.
Hey,
a smile spreads across my face. You're here. I haven't seen Dash since we left Taverton Tower. After we walked down from the roof, someone pointed out that the blonde and green-haired man in our company was not a Griffin-gifted rebel. He was a guild employee who'd recently been arrested and was supposed to be awaiting his trial in a cell somewhere. There was a bit of commotion then, and Dash's father, who'd been reunited with his missing son when Dash arrived to warn everyone about the Unseelies, got extremely angry. In the end, Counselor Ashlow agreed to release Dash into his parents' custody and told him to report to the guild the next morning to sort out his situation. But of course, she'd been too busy to deal with Dash yesterday, so he had to return to the guild again today.
Did they make a decision about you?
I thought the head counselor was going to let this drag on forever.
Nah, they all got tired of me and dismissed the whole case.
Really?
Well, not exactly. I demanded a truth potion and explained how a counselor and three guardians beat me up and took me off to a secret research station where tests are run on Griffin Gifted and certain other Fae. I didn't even get to the end of my story when Counselor Ashlow rushed in and said she'd decided to dismiss the case and I was free to leave immediately while they dealt with more important issues.
Like trying to keep half the guild from turning against her?
Yeah, pretty much. But everyone was very interested to hear about Reinhold Research Station. That's all going to be out in the open soon, and Counselor Ashlow certainly isn't going to be head for much longer, I can tell you that. I think we're going to be voting in an entirely new council soon.
That's great, I say. And it is great, but I'm also wondering why he's still standing in the doorway and leaving all this space between us.
He grins. You missed me, didn't you, Emmy?
Oh, shut up. I fold my arms. I didn't miss you nearly as much as you missed me. He looks down before peering up at me between his lashes.
You're right. I missed you terribly. That's why I got you flowers. Well, not flowers, they're actually leaves, but they're prettier than most flowers out there, and I wanted to give you something I could be sure you've never seen before.
He pushes away from the doorframe and steps closer. Then he removes his hand from behind his back
and produces a bunch of narrow branches with dozens of leaves still attached. Each leaf cycles through a seemingly endless palette of colors. But it isn't just the colors that are amazing. It's the way they glow, like burning embers, as each leaf shifts from one color to the next. I carefully take the bunch from him, just in case the leaves are as hot as they look.
"Don't worry," Dash says. "I know they look like burning coals, but they're not hot. You can touch them."
I raise one finger and run it along the edge of a leaf. It glows a little more brightly wherever I touch it. "They're beautiful, Dash. Thank you." I look up at him and add, "Okay, maybe I lied. I definitely missed you as much as you missed." I don't get to finish my sentence because his lips are already on mine. With the bunch of leaves still in my hand, I wrap my arms around his neck and press myself closer. His hands slide into my hair, then down my back. Sparks zap across my lips and tongue, then down my spine and over my arms. I mold myself against him as his fingers press deeper into my back, and something softer than sparks rains down onto my arms. I pull my lips away from his and take a moment to catch my breath. Then I look to the side and see what's drifting down through the air around us. Tiny, star-shaped yellow flowers. I laugh in amazement.
"Did those come from us?"
"Yeah, I'm pretty sure they did," Dash says, and I can hear the smile in his voice. As I watch them, the flowers slowly disappear. Dash presses his lips against my forehead. Then he pulls back and says, "Oh, oops." I look up and find his gaze pointing behind me. I spin around. Vi and Rin are standing in the doorway. Vi with a frisbee in her hand, and Rin holding a pile of blankets.
"Well," Rin says, his eyebrows raised.
"That was unexpected." "Oh, crap, this is embarrassing." I press my free hand against my burning face.
"You know we're going to have a talk about this," Rin says to Dash.
"Right. About your intentions."
"Of course," Dash says.
I sense him standing a little straighter behind me.
"I have only the most honorable of intentions."
"Uh-huh," Violet says, crossing her arms and eyeing him with a doubtful look.
"So, should we head down to the beach?" I ask loudly, waving my bunch of leaves in the direction of the door.
"After we finish packing the baskets, which I'm going to do right now." I avoid everyone's gaze as I place the leaves on the table and hastily finish packing food into the baskets by hand.
"Euro leaves?" Vi asks, taking a closer look at the bunch.
"Yes," Dash says. "From Creepy Hollow. Picked them myself."
"Nice."
Once the baskets are packed and the blankets and games have been gathered, Vi and Rin lift everything into the air and direct it out of the house and down the stairs. Dash and I walk behind them, our hands clasped together, and I'm pretty sure my cheeks burn the whole way down. By the time we reach the ground, I'm starting to recover, until Dash kisses my cheek and whispers, "You're pretty when you blush." I roll my eyes, but I don't let go of his hand, and I don't stop smiling. I know Vi and Rin are still close enough to overhear us, and when I can no longer stand the awkward, to me at least, silence between the four of us, I say,
"So, tell me about the Unseelies. What's happening with the Unseelies?"
"Oh, flipping flip. The Unseely Court is one gigantic mess," Dash says. "I have no idea what's going on there. The only thing I know is that Rourke and the former king will spend the rest of their lives in prison."
"A guild prison?" I ask.
When Dash nods, I say, "I thought the guild couldn't really mess too much with Unseely matters."
"Yeah, but this wasn't just an Unseely matter. They exposed our entire world. And they tried to take over the human world. That affects everyone. They'll probably end up in Noxum for what they did."
Ahead of us, Vi and Rin slow down slightly until they're walking beside us. The blankets and picnic baskets continue to glide through the air.
"I almost wish, for their sakes," Vi says,
"that the death penalty still existed. I wouldn't want to be tortured for life. A few days was long enough for me.
Perhaps, Dash says, with an entirely new council being voted in, they'll take another look at how Noxum is run.
I look ahead as we near the beach and see Chase and Jack are already there.
It looks like Chase is giving Jack a lesson in how to move chairs around with magic.
Oh, I do know one other thing about the Unseelies, Dash says. Remember that prison I was in, beneath their palace grounds?
I told the guild about it when they first questioned me about the Griffin Rebels. I thought they might conveniently forget about it, but now it sounds like they're demanding to know exactly who's being imprisoned there and why. And now is a good time to ask, what with so much upheaval going on in their court, they won't be able to cover things up easily.
Oh, that's great. I squeeze his hand. I think I might actually end up liking this new guild that's coming together.
Well, what would be cool, Dash says, seeing as how I currently still work there.
Hey,
he says to Vi and Rin, if the guild decides that Griffin-gifted fairies are totally awesome and should be guardians, will you come and work at the guild again?
Rin laughs, and Vi raises her eyebrows.
Look, I'm not going to say never, she says, since I've got a few centuries ahead of me still. But right now, I think I'll go with no.
That would be a no from me, too, Rin says. For now, at least.
We reach the enchanted beach and find that Bandit and Filigree are there, too. Filigree is sitting on a chair in the form of a miniature pig, watching dog-shaped Bandit play around in the sand. With the help of a bit of magic, we soon have our picnic blankets, chairs, and beanbags arranged. Rin, Chase, and Jack move further down the beach to play with the exploding frisbee, which apparently makes a bang and sends colorful smoke into the air if anyone holds onto it for too long before throwing it to the next person.
Hey! Someone shouts from behind us. Don't start the party without us!
I look over my shoulder to see Calla and Perry coming toward us. Calla hurries down the sand and swings her arms around me, squeezing tight as she says, my favorite rebel.
Hey, what about me?
Dash complains.
And what about Chase? I ask with a laugh. Shouldn't he be your favorite rebel?
Before Calla can answer, Perry reaches us and says, you guys have got an awesome place here. Seriously, I love it.
Thank you, Vi says. We've worked hard over the years to make our oasis what it is.
Just think, he adds, if the guild's policies regarding griffin abilities change, and you no longer have to live in hiding, you won't need all the serious protective magic you've got around here.
She sighs. As nice as it would be to not worry about keeping this place hidden, I don't think we'll ever get rid of all the protective magic. We wouldn't want to invite any rogue griffin haters to our doorstep to ruin everything we've built.
Yeah, I guess not, Perry says.
Then he looks at me, reaches into his back pocket, and says, I have something for you, Em.
Me? I ask in surprise.
Yes, an envelope arrived at our guild this morning addressed to me, and inside it was a small scroll with your name on it.
Oh, I take the rolled up paper from him.
That's weird. I guess the sender didn't know how else to get it to you.
I walk a few paces away to open the scroll and read it, fairly certain before looking at the name at the bottom that I know who this note is from.
Em, I thought I should probably let you know I'm okay. I couldn't go home, and I couldn't go with you, so I figured I'd head off on my own. Well, not entirely on my own. Imperia's with me. She couldn't wait to get away from Dad. I know it was probably one of the worst decisions you ever made, but I'm so glad you showed up at our palace. I had fun getting to know you and teaching you magic, though I would never wish upon you the kind of fate Rourke planned for you as his wife. I still kind of wish we could have been sisters. Anyway, maybe one day we'll meet again. For now, I'm off to see the rest of the worlds. Both of them. XX, Rora. A small smile pulls at my lips as I lower the note. I was almost completely sure she was fine, but it's good to know for certain.
Good news? Vi asks as I return to the picnic. Yes, Aurora's fine. She's exploring the world with her dragon.
That sounds amazing. It does sound like a lot of fun, I say. Maybe Bandit and I can do some exploration together. After all, most of this world is new to me.
You know who you should meet?
Vi says at the same time Calla says, Oh, you have got to meet Vi's explorer friend.
They look at each other and say, Tilly. After laughing, Vi adds, When Tilly eventually finishes whatever exciting expedition she's currently on, I'll make sure to introduce you to her, Em.
Cool. Hey, Bandit, do you want to go exploring with me?
I call to the black cat, currently swiping at the sand where Dash has buried his feet. Bandit looks up and cocks his head a little to the side.
I'll take that as a yes, I say, as I sit at the edge of the blanket beside Dash.
As the last part of the afternoon passes, other members of the Oasis community come onto the beach to join us. Gaius, Kobe, several others I've met once or twice, and some I only know because I helped get their unconscious bodies out of Reinhold. Even Elizabeth arrives at some point. When the sun has disappeared, completely, and stars glitter in the blue-black sky above us, everyone gathers on their towels, blankets, or chairs, while Chase and Rin walk a little further down the beach. I lean my head on Dash's shoulder, watching Chase and Rin gathering magic for a few minutes.
Not too much longer, Vi says from beside me. They should be ready soon.
And it looks like they are. I lift my head from Dash's shoulder as Rin and Chase stand apart and raise their hands. I hold my breath, waiting. Suddenly, fireworks explode above us, every color imaginable, spinning and darting through the sky before slowly falling, only to be joined by more light and more colors whirling high above us. With Dash's hand wrapped around mine and Vi sitting on my other side, I watch the display in wonder until every last spark has drifted down toward the enchanted ocean. Then, as Bandit climbs into my lap, I breathe out a sigh of absolute contentment. I raise my face to the stars, close my eyes, and smile. I am finally home. This concludes Rebel Fairy by Rachel Morgan, narrated by Amanda Dolan. Copyright 2017 by Rachel Morgan. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Rachel Morgan and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.